Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everybody. You're welcome indeed to the Game on Sunday podcast and a new season of such. Michael Lester here with you. And as I was last year, I am joined on the hurling side of things by Tomás Mulcahy. Hello, Tomás. How are you keeping?
Hello, Michael. How are you? Happy New Year to you.
And you too. Looking forward to another big season?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. It is. Ready to go by all accounts, isn't it? We're ready for action.
Oh, we're always ready for action. No worries about that. We're also, folks, this year, delighted to be joined on the football side of things by Martin Carney, whom you all know, obviously, from his playing days and as a punter in Gaelic games and all that. Martin, thank you so much for being with us. And how are you keeping in the West?
Not a bother. I just kind of trying to kind of just batten down the hatches at the moment, waiting for the night storm. But you know, we got lucky, I think, on Sunday night, actually, that there wasn't more damage done down here. It was pretty serious. But we're great. We're great. A lot to be thankful for.
100%. Yeah, I remember, Martin, a couple of, Ginny Mac, and going back maybe 20 years or more, doing the Galway Rally. And the weekend before the rally, which was this time of the year, it was like springtime. You'd be getting out of the car, and you were doing the preparations for it. And just kind of enjoying the bit of sunshine and the mild weather and all that. And cripes, the following weekend, the weekend of the rally, it was like Argamedon. It was just unbelievable, kind of, you know. So some things never change. You know, you can blame global warming or anything else you like, but the weather is still the weather. You
know? West of Ireland weather certainly is.
at least you're indoors in the car, Michael, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, every now and then,
you know, over the ditch or behind the ditch or something, you were drying, yeah.
Anyway, listen, let's talk Gaelic games. How about that? Before we look ahead to the season that's coming up, I suppose we should reflect because the GAA season has started already with the club finals last weekend and two big games, of course. The hurling, I must say, well, both games were great, but the hurling was really interesting because it was such a cracker, Tomás, this between St. Thomas's of Galway and O'Loughlin Gaels, of course, from Kilkenny. And I guess it could have gone either way. For me, Tomás, there were some absolutely fabulous scores, but I suppose the most fabulous score was the one that won the game for Thomas's.
Michael, it was, I mean, again, like I woke up Sunday morning and I said, there'll be no matches played here anywhere today. You know? The club finals will go off. And I was speaking to a friend of mine who was on his way into Croke Park for the football side of things. And they were struggling to get there. They were saying, will they ever make it? Because it was so bad. And but I suppose the big thing really was, like, you have the high stands in Croke Park, creates a bit of a win. But the big thing was the pitch, Michael, I think. Anywhere else outside of Croke Park, and that match wouldn't be playable. Maybe Páirc Uí Chaoimh, maybe one or two others around the country, but it wouldn't have been playable. And it turned out to be a cracking afternoon. Hurling and football, I really, really enjoyed the hurling side of it. Many, I think, major controversies in terms of talking points, but, like, you've got to hand it to both teams. I mean, they gave it their all. It was incredible. The endeavour, the commitment, the pride in the club and the jersey. That's what we like about club hurling, and that's what we like about the Club All-Ireland series, and none so better than last Sunday in Croke Park. And you mentioned St. Thomas's and the scores they got. My God, they were incredible. And if you're O'Loughlin Gaels, Kilkenny, you'll be disappointed. They didn't have more on the board by half-time. They probably were the better team. They'll probably have, maybe Michael or Martin, you might come in on this one in terms of, might have a word in Hawkeye's ear, because to me, it was clearly the ball was over the line. You have two umpires looking at this. There's the player lying on the ground with a ball in his hand, and it seems clearly he's over the line. So they will feel hard done by that. But look, to me, at the end of the day, I think St. Thomas's were deserving winners. The last 15, 20 minutes down to 14 men was an outstanding performance. And you mentioned those scores, Enoch Burke. I think the one out underneath, yeah, the Hogan stand, as you mentioned, was just incredible. But he had won before that as well. I think he just picked the ball into his hand and he hit it without looking, as if he knew the balls were straight ahead of him and straight over the bar. Fantastic scores and a great, great team performance by St. Thomas.
I suppose, Martin, seeing that Tomas is bringing you in there, that we should say, in fairness to all the officials in both matches on Sunday, it was an incredibly difficult job because it might be tough on the players and spectators, but God almighty, the conditions weren't great for the officials either, and difficult maybe to get some of those marginal calls at times.
Yeah, well, I thought in many respects, Michael, over the last two, you know, with for the All-Ireland semi-final, particularly the Kilmacud game, and the GAA got lucky. Like, how in the name of God that game was played, that All-Ireland semi-final, I'll never know. And last weekend too, again, it's interesting listening to the post-match comments from one or two of the Glen lads. They spoke just about the wind being in the vicinity of Hill 16. It seems that the remainder of the pitch, due to the high stands, it was possible to play football. And if you can recall it, there was an awful lot of very, very good kicking of the ball into the wind by both sides at different times. So Tomas is perfectly right. Had that been played anywhere else, you know, had it been scheduled to be played anywhere else, it wouldn't have gone ahead, Michael. And again, like the hurling, I'd say credit to the players and to the officials. I thought the officials in the football naturally had more interest in that. I thought that he did a very, very good job of it. And top of that, I think both sets of players, I thought, played with great sportsmanship. And they deserve great credit for the way they approached it in terms of their spirit, their character. And from the actual result point of view, congratulations to Glenn. But there'll be a lot of, shall we say, sore heads and scratching heads in Athlone with St. Bridget's after that defeat, because it was certainly a case of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory from their point of view.
Yeah, it was. The two teams here, just to clarify for people, St. Bridget's of Roscommon and Wattie Graham's, of course, from Derry. And Wattie Graham's winning. And from their point of view, you know, I was a neutral to the thing, you know, but St. Bridget's looked during that first half, Martin, like they had that game by the throat. And then just before halftime, the whole scenario changed, if you like. But you couldn't deny Wattie Graham's, because after last year and the final and losing out and all that kind of stuff, in debatable circumstances as well, you know, fair play to them.
No, fair dues to them. You know, the character they showed and the display that Conor Glass gave, you know, when he was needed most in the second half, all of those kind of combined to make it a winning performance. But you're right, like, I mean, a couple of things, like, in the first half, Michael, correctly, St. Bridget's had the game, like, they were 8 points to four up going into half time. And next thing, out of nowhere, I think it was Joey McDermott, got a goal on half time. They followed that up at a point. So from going in 4 points down, Bridget's and Wattie Graham's went in level. And, as you know, I think that goal on the half time whistle was a key one from a Glenn point of view. You look at the second half then, Michael, and you look at the whites count. Like, Glenn simply couldn't kick the ball straight in the second half. They kicked 11 whites altogether. And against that, I think St. Bridget's only shot two in the entire game. And to a degree, you feel, you know, some sympathy for them in that their efficiency, their, shall we say, the display of the likes of Ben O'Carroll, who scored, I think it was 3 points and was instrumental in being involved in a goal in seven, that his display wasn't rewarded with a winning performance. But the character that Glenn showed, the quality of the performance that midfielder Conor Glass gave late in the game, I think, you know, those two things in particular, I think probably made them the deserving winners of the day.
I know, as I said to you, as a neutral, you had to congratulate them, you know, after the heartbreak of last year and all that kind of stuff. By the way, Wattie Graham's, for those of you who don't realise it, and I referenced Joe Brawley and his comments in the Sunday Independent, his article in the Sunday Independent last weekend, who was explaining that Wattie Graham was a gentleman called Walter Graham, a Presbyterian from Northern Ireland, who in 1798, in the rebellion, decided to put in his lot with the rebels And for his troubles, he was arrested and he was hung on the ground on the pitch, or what is now the pitch, of Watty Graham's. But worse was to happen to him. Now, you think there couldn't be too much worse happening to you than being hung. But he was then decapitated and his head was paraded around the local area by the British authorities and all that kind of stuff. So happily, we've moved on from those days to things like kicking a football or hitting a hurry ball or whatever.
We have, Michael, but I'd say there was a few fellas last Sunday felt like doing something similar because I go back to the referee in terms of, look, and I do agree, Michael, it was a very difficult day, but the St. Thomas sending off to me was harsh. I didn't think I warranted the red card from where I was looking at it from my couch, cozy room, watching the television. I didn't think there was contact there. I didn't think there was a lifting of the elbow from the player to actually make contact. And what kind of maybe upsets me on that is in terms of the first half, there was a clear headbutt by one of the players and it went on penalised. And then I go back to the point in terms of, and that's why I brought you into the equation, Martin, in terms of Hawkeye. I thought Hawkeye was able to actually determine whether a ball was over the line or not.
No, it seems to us on that, and again, sorry for not bringing it up earlier, that it only kind of adjudicates on shots that are taken from outfield and whether they go over the post or inside the post or outside the post. But there doesn't seem to be a camera along the line to actually determine whether a ball has crossed the line or not. I haven't seen a camera actually adjudicating on a situation like that or being used to adjudicate on a situation like that. But there is no doubt about it. Had there been one there last weekend, that goal that didn't happen for O'Loughlin's would have been allowed. Because
it would have been allowed,
It wasn't just an inch over the line. It was a good foot nearly over the line.
It was a good foot over the line with the ball being held by the defender, you know. So, look, yes. I mean, can't take away from the game, though. Look, I suppose these things happen in matches, but the bigger the games, you kind of feel it, particularly in the likes of Croke Park, that this shouldn't happen, Michael. It's just like losing by a pint and you go back home that night, training all year, all the commitment that goes into it. And you'd be very upset and very annoyed about it, right, you know? But look, there were other incidents in the match as well. But look, as I said from the start, I can't take away from St. Thomas's. They were absolutely fantastic. And one thing that came to mind, I suppose, for O'Loughlin's, were looking at it in terms of the game themselves. They'd be looking at it 15 against 14. And, you know, what do you do with the extra man? And at this time, I thought it was brilliant by St. Thomas's. O'Loughlin's keep the extra man way back in defence in their full back line. So what do Thomas's do? They start scoring from long range. They start putting the ball. They didn't put the ball into the spare man. They didn't give him the opportunity to be the sweeper to clean up. So some of their point taking was just incredible. And Aina Burke and David Burke and all these guys, they were a joy to watch. And I think it's a great boost for Galway hurling because the physicality that they brought to the game was, both teams, was second to none. The shoulder charges, the hurling, the hooking, the blocking, the physical strength was matched by the quality of hurling as well. And it was a joy to watch, I must say.
Yeah, but equally in the football, Moss, there was a great, number of man-to-man contests. It wasn't all about systems. It wasn't all about structure. There was some great kicking of the ball. And I would, one of these advocates would love to see more and more kicking of the ball. But I just like to, in that context, refer to the St. Bridget's goal. The goal was set up by Paul McGrath with one of the most deftly weighted passes I've seen in football in a long time. He deftly just put it over the cornerback's head into a running Ben O'Carroll, who kind of just laid it on a plate for his teammate to flick it into the net. And the other thing, Michael, do you remember when we were youngsters? We used to play football in the street and we used to have a fly goalkeeper. A goalie that would kind of go anywhere. But I'd say
we have those in the modern game as well, Omar.
Well, this is the point I wanted to bring up. We certainly have. And if you look at the goal that Conor Glass got on Sunday, in the circumstance, Cormac Sheehy, who is the St. Bridget's goalie, and who is so brave and so good with so many of his kickouts, he lost his bearings for that goal because he was about 20 metres out from goals when the move started. and he was backpedaling. He wasn't set, and he was somewhat unbalanced when Conor Glass took the shot. And the shot came at a level, I thought, that would have been savable had he been kind of set and prepared for it on his line. But again, Glass, the way Glass kind of carried that team in the last 15 minutes was just out of this world. And, you know, his calmness really, really struck me. And another thing, an interesting thing for Sir Michael that I didn't read it in any detail, but he was in Australia, I think, from he was 15. And he talked about the strength and conditioning they did out there. But they never lifted anything above their own body weight. And as a consequence, he was putting that down to the fact that he was free from injury nearly all his career.
Amazing. So yes.
Interesting.
That's
point.
Amazing, Martin. Yeah, that's it's a very good point. Very valid point. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas here, like, we have guys pumping iron, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. And you'd be sorry for the iron. You know.
That's a very interesting comment broadly, Martin, in terms of sport generally, because as we all know, I'm a Manchester United fan and they're not going through the best of times. But the number of injuries that Manchester United have had this year, you're saying to yourself, like, what's the training regime here?
There's so many
fellas getting injured.
That's right. And it's the same in Newcastle. The team with the most money backing it, Michael, they have got so many players injured all year. I don't follow them or anything, but I just read kind of...
Sure, yeah.
An annual kind of bereavement kind of count, so to speak, as how many are kind of unavailable for the next couple of games, you know. And that has to be down to, you're perfectly right, to the training regimes they're undertaking.
Yeah. Well, if Newcastle can get Jose Mourinho out of the nice settings of Rome, then things might change. But anyway, look, that's their issue. Let's talk.
You'd warn them, Mike, in terms of those Premiership players. They don't train anywhere near where a GA player trains in terms of what they put themselves through in terms of the physicality side of it. So you'd wonder how they're getting they're injured so often as well.
Sure. Yeah. But sure, to be fair, the most injured athletes statistically are people like runners and sprinters.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, they never hit anybody or be hit by anybody, but it just, if you bring a level of fitness, I'm not an expert in this, by the way, just a general thought, up to a level where even a small little thing can cause you a problem, kind of, no matter how fit you are. But anyway, look at that's the problem of sprinters is not going to solve that in next weekend and the week after when the Alliance League starts.
You were very good at the 100-yard dash, I believe, Michael, yeah.
Do you know what? I was. We're used to know. Hang on, you started it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Anyway, look, good. Come here. Martin.
Yes.
Football around the corner. And without kind of big bias, I'm not towards any particular fixture, but sure, look, you can never ignore a Galway-Mayo match, which is at the weekend. And that's one to look forward to. From a Mayo point of view, Martin, they go to Salt Hill for their opening game against Galway, and then the following week, I think, they have Dublin. So it's not the easiest of starts.
It's not an easy start, Michael. And in general, like when you look at it, like it starts this weekend, like the finals of the National League are on the 30th, 31st of March. You're going to have 7 games in 9 weeks. And as you say, from a Mayo perspective, you know, they need to win at least one of those 2 games, because if you don't get a good start, you know, you're playing catch up from then on. Now, it was interesting the other day that there is forward Ryan O'Donoghue talked about the fact that they're not overly keen on winning the league this year. Mm. But nonetheless, I'll tell you, when they go to Pierce Stadium on Sunday, that's one game, no matter when they go out and play, they'll want to win more than any. And they have a little record at the moment, Michael, that can uphold with Galway. And so far as last year, they played Galway 3 times. In the opening game of the league, they lost, they drew actually with them. But subsequently in the league final and in the championship, they beat Galway narrowly. And Kevin McStay last year, certainly I think his year was a qualified success in that he won a league final. But this year, I think the Mayo public are looking for more. Remember, Mike, from 2012 up to maybe 2 years ago, Mayo public were in Croke Park for All-Ireland semi-finals and finals on 18 occasions. It was a regular pilgrimage for Mayo people.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the standards I think that Kevin McStay is going to be judged by. Is he going to get his players to semi-final and final stages of the championship? Because anything short of that, I think they'll be highly critical of him, and there'll be a certain amount of pressure coming on his shoulders. So,
but Martin, have Mayo now the team to do that? Because back in the day, and there was some heartbreak, but I look back at those Mayo teams of going back whatever the last five, 10 years and that sort of thing. They were definitely player by player. You'd look around the pitch and say, these guys are good enough. And it just didn't happen for them. Have they that quality of player now?
I don't think they have, to be fair about it. You know, the of the old guard, the only two now, I think, well, there are three. There's the O'Connor brothers, Dermot and Killian. And Killian has had so many injuries in the last few years, particularly with his Achilles tendon. There's Aidan O'Shea up front. But basically, they haven't got that quality that they would have had, say, from 2014 up to 2019. Now, as against that, Mike, they had a run last summer. Remember, they are in the championship. They beat Kerry down in Killarney. I think first time team to beat Kerry in a championship match at Killarney in a long, long time. But all of the players that played in that game, that started that game, are available to Kevin McStay this year. So if he can bring them on a notch or two, up a notch or two from the standards that they set last year, then maybe he can get more joy than a lot of people down here are anticipating. But you're perfectly right. The quality that was there in the past, the togetherness that was there, the teamwork that was there, and just the competitive edge that was there, I'm not sure just if it's there yet with the present group. And there's so many young lads who have come in the last couple of years. They're still going to take maybe another, you know, year, 18 months before they kind of come close to reaching the levels maybe that are needed to complete at the top level.
It's natural, Tomás, I suppose, that at this time of the year, we're having these kind of discussions and, you know, trying to look at who's capable of, who isn't and all that kind of stuff. But it's still only, you know, still the end of January. So there's a long way to go. What from let's say from a hurling point of view, what will counties be looking for in the next couple of weeks or month or two?
Yeah, it's interesting, Michael. I mean, I'd say if we go back 12 months, I'd say we were having this conversation again in terms of the compactness of what's going on in terms of the inter-county season. And Martin, did you mention that it'll be over by the 31st of March, the National Football League?
Is it seven matches in 9 weeks? You have 7 matches in 9 weeks, and if you reach the final, you have 8 games in 10 weeks, which is very, very dramatic.
And remember,
for example, you were Mayo or Galway and reached the league final, you're out the following weekend, Mayo are in New York the following weekend, and I think Galway, I might be wrong on this one, but I definitely know that Mayo are in New York the following weekend. So there is no, shall we say, little kind of period just to reassess, to reestablish yourself and to refocus on your career ahead for the championship.
And yeah, of course, we know, Martin, and we know exactly what happened with Mayo last year from that point of view.
Yeah,
and like it's the same on the hurling side of it, right? So look, we did mention about the strength and conditioning and, you know, the injuries, and it now seems the county guys are going back much earlier, pre-Christmas. They're back in training, some of them in November, right? Because they have a strength and conditioning program going on. They're actually, if you're out of a club championship, you're part of that strength and conditioning even throughout the summer months, right? Because I think a lot of teams found having the strength and conditioning and going straight from a gym to a field, they were picking up a fortune of injuries. So that's why they were looking at getting matches. And like you wonder where it's all going to end in terms of player welfare. The amount of games that are coming for these guys, the training that's coming for these guys, and you're kind of saying to yourself, right, I'm delighted. I read this morning the Munster Senior League will not be finished in terms of hurling. Because if you looked at the last couple of weeks, the weather that was there and expecting players to go out and perform at a very high level and maybe impress management that I'm ready to actually put an inter-county jersey on. I think it's very, very unfair, but it is what it is. And in terms of National League, who wants to win the National League at this stage in terms of what happened with Mayo, as Martin said last year, in terms of championship? It's the same with the hurling, Michael. You go win a National League campaign and you're out maybe the following week in a round robin series in hurling. And if it's Munster, so competitive, I think teams may be wanting to win one or two matches and we'll be pulling back a little bit in with our heads all firmly fixed on championship because that's coming very, very early as well this year.
Yes, it is. Jumping ahead a small bit, Tomás and Martin, and jumping past the league, if we may. Looking to the year ahead, in hurling, Tomás, we all know how Limerick have dominated the scene for the last couple of years and that. Where are they going to be at, do you think, in 2024, and who is nearest to them?
Yeah, look, I suppose it will be interesting to see what kind of campaign Limerick take on in the league campaign, because last year, Michael, we discussed they won the National League and you could have handed them out the All-Ireland back in March. They were so good. And they kind of struggled a little bit in the Munster Championship campaign. And a one-point win against Cork, a draw, and they were gone. They were gone from the All-Ireland series. So they need the drive for five. The most important thing now for Limerick is the Munster Championship campaign, getting out of Munster, getting to Croke Park. And I think that applies to Cork as well. We haven't got out of Munster for a while in terms of getting to Croke Park in terms of the last 2 years. And we need to be doing that because I think it, and you might think I'm biased here, I think Robbie Flynn coming back into the Cork equation, getting to a Croke Park, I think momentum could start taking off for Cork. I'm expecting an awful lot of Cork this year because they've had minor success. They've had under 20 success. There's a serious blend of experience as well. And I'm expecting an awful lot from them. And look, you go back and you're probably going to look at Galway, Shepherd needs to get something from there. And you look at Kilkenny. Kilkenny are always going to be Kilkenny. You know, they're going to be there, going to be thereabouts. The big thing is there something? Is there a kick in Tipperary? Is there something in Waterford in terms of Davy and what's going on there? And they multiply players that have walked away from it, new guys coming back into the selection that have been away for a period of time. What's the morale like in the camp there? Can he turn that around in terms of performance? It all remains to be seen, but the timing is everything here, Michael. It's the timing now in terms of your strength and conditioning, your physical fitness guys, your psychologists in terms of actually getting them right, peaking for the right matches at the right time and getting to Croke Park, because you have a little bit of leeway. Once you get to Croke Park, a good number of teams are gone. There could be serious threats that you might have thought have been there from the outset are gone, and momentum can take off. And I think, look, Limerick are the team to beat again. Limerick are the team to beat. Maybe they need to find two or three challengers to the existing 15 that are there. Maybe the likes of Declan Hannan at number six might be coming to the end of his time in terms of he's been there a long time. What a servant, what an ambassador for them. And I'm sure behind the scenes they're looking at, can we find a replacement number six? And maybe somebody up front to put a threat on the forward line again. That six forwards that they have, somebody put their hands up. And I think that's what John Kiely would look to find in the National League campaign.
And Martin, from a football point of view, how do you see it?
Well, look, it's Michael, what we're looking at Dublin and Kerry, obviously, Derry in the equation as well, Galway and Mayo and Tyrone. I think, again, what you're looking at basically is seven out of the eight Division One teams having a chance, as well as that probably in Division Two from the Division Two teams. Armagh and Donegal, I think, it could be in the mix. But the incentive for Dublin is many fold. For example, three guys there, Simon, Stephen Cluxton and John McCarthy, or Jim McCarthy rather, if they play, if they kind of go ahead this year, they're going to, they're hoping to win their 10th All-Ireland medal, which is quite remarkable, Michael, when you think about it. Kerry, last year, okay, they'll be very disappointed in the way things kind of ended up against Dublin in the All-Ireland final. But I still think Jack O'Connor will get that little bit of extra if he can get out of his team, rather, if he can get a midfielder. I think Jack Barry has gone on his travels this year, so he's not going to be available to them. But if the Clifford brothers up front can play to their best, they will be formidable again. But the one that I'm fascinated with is the whole Derry conundrum. Like Derry last year, I think they lost the semi-final to Kerry by 117 to 116. Now, taking on Mickey Hart was just quite remarkable. Like Mickey had been in charge of Louth. He had taken them up to Division 2 of the league. I think everybody was looking forward to, you know, a year where maybe he might bring them up a notch or two extra. But his... we saw the reaction with Joe and a number of other people with his appointment. And it'll be fascinating to see how well he can get into the heads of the players. You know, how readily they will accept him. And can he actually kind of get that little bit extra from Derry that'll actually win them in All-Ireland? Remember last year, again, as I said, they came very close. They had done very well under Rory Gallagher in previous years, but his appointment to me is quite remarkable. And that to me is going to be where an awful lot of attention is devoted this year in the football, is to, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Derry in that respect. You know, Glenn winning the All-Ireland club and all of that has maybe added the sense of expectation that is a bit higher. But from the outsiders, you know, they haven't won one since 1993. They would be the most likely. Now, your own county, Michael, Galway. You know, if Galway could get Shane Walsh and Damien Cobar playing in tandem and playing to their best, to me, they have a fabulously gifted group of players. I watched the Sixers last week, actually, NUIG playing, and there was a young McCullen lad playing midfield for them, a McLaughlin lad. We might remember his grandfather, I think. Was it Joe McLaughlin in the early 70s? But, that's right, you know, yeah. I think they have the basis of a very, very good team, and they will be highly competitive. Horrocks is probably, again, keen on maybe just discovering a few new players in the National League, but certainly his mind, his emphasis, his focus is going to be totally on getting out of Connacht, getting a number one seed in the All-Ireland series and taking it from there. But they also will be a realistic contender. So those four, Michael, Kerry, Dublin, Derry and Galway will be my top four, actually, for an All-Ireland series this year.
Well, we await and see. But as I said, we have the league to deal with first. But we have a couple of other things. One thing in particular to talk about, gentlemen. Going through the fixture list for the hurling and the football, the Rugby Alliance League, next weekend and the weekend after, one thing that struck me as you're going down through the list, fairly obviously, the venues for matches and the number of grounds around the country these days, of course, who have a title sponsor along with their name. And this has been very much, gentlemen, and Tomás in particular, in the news.
Over to you, Tomás, now. Take it up, boy.
And if you spare apples and oranges, huh?
Gentlemen, and Tomás, you first, obviously, because this debate has kind of centered around Páirc Uí Chaoimh, obviously. And I saw Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, saying recently that the government might even look at this kind of thing, because if they're giving grants to county grounds and that kind of stuff, about the whole naming rights issue and all that, what do you make of it, seeing that, A, we're talking about the Cork County grounds, and B, let's face it, we're talking about a car company.
Yeah, and Michael, I was interested with the political injection, as they say, from Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin, again, obviously a Cork man and his son involved with the Cork footballers, in terms of the money that was sent by government in terms of the grant process. I'm sure Kevin O'Donovan and Parky Queeve wouldn't mind a little knock at the door and throwing another check their way. We'd still call it Parky Queeve if they could clear that debt. And maybe that might be an incentive for them. But no, look, Michael, I'm involved with one Cork, right? It's a kind of it's the commercial entity below within Parky Queeve to look at all areas of generating revenue stream, the grassroots, the coaching structures, everything that's involved in the GA in the modern world we're living in terms of commercialism and stuff as well. And look, when Parky Queeve's bit, naming rights was always on the table. So if you go around the country and you see Kingspan Breffni Park and you see FBD Semple Stadium and you see Tuas Gaelic Grounds and you see, I mean, I was asking guys, Nolan Park. But sure, Nolan Park, there's no naming rights in Nolan Park. It's their heritage and their history with GA. They'd never have naming rights. I said, look it up. It's UPMC Nolan Park. So Parky Queeve is no different, right? You'd love to be able to say, yeah, and I'd like to put on record, yeah, the Parky Queeve's name should be kept, and it could, and a super value Parky Queeve, I have no issues whatsoever on that basis. I would hope that common sense prevails, and that's what happens, because the revenue stream is so important. Mike, we spoke of the last 12 months in terms of preparing it to count the teams, the cost levels that it's gone to. You look at the grounds, the maintenance, the running of stadiums at this stage. It's a massive, massive business at this stage, right? And every penny that Cork GA can get in, they need to take. And that's in terms of commercial advertising around the pitch side of things, your jersey sponsorship, your naming rights, adding to that as well. And look, I think they're getting another steal, to be honest with you, super value for the money that's being bandied about. I think they're getting that steal. And you kind of look at it and you say to yourself, it's a Cork brand, which is absolutely fantastic, giving massive employment to the Cork public and countrywide as well. Are steeped in terms of GAA sponsorship because they're the All-Ireland Series brand sponsor in terms of football. And just like Michael, there's so much involved in all the communities. In every Cork community, there's a super value or a central, right? And that's the Musgrave brand that's out in Tramore Road. So I think it's a perfect fit. You'd love to say that they would pay the same money that was on the table for Super Value Park as for Parky Queeve, or Super Value Parky Queeve, but I believe there might be a bit of a discussion to be had on that basis. But I think it's a fantastic opportunity, and hopefully it's resolved and it's put to bed, because look, it's no different to what's going on all over the country. Revenue streams are becoming so important to everybody. And I said to people, and I said to people during the week, Michael, if Croke Park was owned by Dublin GAA, would it be naming rights on it?
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Martin, final comment from you on this topic. What do you think about it all?
Well, look, it's just no more than most. Looking at other pitches around the country, you have Boxed Athletic Grounds, you have in Armagh, you have Netwatch Cullen Park in Carlow, and Chadwick's Wexford Park in Wexford. The reason I'm saying these, Michael, in Mayo you have Hastings Insurance, yeah, McHale Park. None of them dropped the name of the original ground.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the mistakes that actually kind of caught you did in this, or the leak that we got about it, that they were to drop the name O'Keefe from it. And to me, that was a terrible betrayal of what Patrick O'Keefe did for the GAA in Cork and nationally. And but at the same time, I agree with Tomás, there is a need to generate revenue, you know, year on year. You know, when you look at the debt that you have in Cork, 30 million of a debt. You know, last year, the running losses in the park itself were 2.6 million. That's just eye-watering stuff. But Tomás, I might be wrong on this, but am I right in saying that Super Value were prepared to offer, was it 200,000 a year to Cork?
The region of 200 to 250,000 or 300,000 a year.
I can't get over that. I can't get over how Cork undersold themselves in that, how they were prepared to accept that amount. You know, the other thing, and this is madness, maybe what I'm saying, and just given the enormity of what it is, you know, there'd be a wonderful gesture on part of the Munster Council, and the likelihood of this happening, of course, is zilch. But if for 1 year all of the Munster hurling championship matches were played in Cork, in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, would they be prepared to do that? It's easy to say this when you're up with Mayo.
Best of luck with that one, Martin.
I had my visa and passport got ready to leave.
I was just going to say to you, Martin,
go to the next Munster Council meeting, Martin, and suggest, yes. How long can you stand here?
You were talking earlier about what Graham's head being created around.
I was just going to say from us there to Martin. Martin, just be careful some of the towns you drive through in Munster for the next 12 months.
We couldn't get the clear boys coming down last year, Martin.
That's right. You see, and I don't mean there's no wrong with the most, but Cork is geographically very peripheral in many respects. You know, to get games with neutral teams, so to speak, that would attract 30 and 40,000. And as you said last year, they wouldn't go down there. Clare wouldn't travel there, isn't that correct?
I mean, there is an awful lot of good work going on behind the scenes there, Martin. There's an awful lot of people involved. They're very senior business people involved. They're trying to do the best that's there. But it's difficult. COVID was a bit of a disaster. No concerts, right? I think there's only one concert there this year, Bruce Springsteen. Well, there are 2 months of championship matches. It needs more games, probably needs a couple of, if you've got a quarterfinals in terms of a Munster pairing hurling-wise, that it would be here rather than Croke Park maybe or something like that, right? So it needs big events like that. And it needs a few other things to happen. Yeah, I agree. Look, 30 million is a lot, right? But there's a few things in the pipeline to say that could be reduced and reduced a good bit if the sale of land and stuff like that they have happens within the next couple of months and stuff like that as well. So it wouldn't be a burden on everybody, right? Because it is a massive, massive burden. It is. There's no doubt about it. And the one thing that you don't want to affect is the player side of it, or what's happening in the player side of it, or the commitment to the players in terms of funding. And that's not the case, because I mean, people could argue that, right? And Cork will argue in terms of football, John Clary or Pat Ryan and the hurling, if we don't do exactly the same as what Limerick are doing, or a Dublin football are doing, or a Kerry football are doing, we'll be left behind completely. And it will be like the Premiership with your Manchester City and your Liverpool, and they're pushing ahead of everybody else. And if Cork don't keep up in terms of spend, in terms of the inter-county status, I might like it in terms of where the big money that's been spent, or other people might like it. But if you don't, you're going to be left behind, unfortunately.
It's like that saying, gentlemen, if you stand still, you're falling behind.
Absolutely, Michael.
And yet you see the problem. Then you see the arguments from the other side, Michael, with, say, for example, the likes of John Prenti in his secretary's report this year in Connacht talked about the cost of financing the teams in Connacht came to something in excess of 6 million, which is a huge sum of money. But you're right in saying, unless you actually are prepared to match the best in terms of the management groups you have, in terms of, you know, how you treat your players, the welfare that you have for your players, then you're going to fall behind completely.
Yeah. Martin, there are serious concerns out there. Where is all this going to end? You know, does Croke
Park? I am convinced. The only thing that is missing in all of it is the whole thing of players being paid.
Yeah.
Now, that might sound ridiculous, but that's the only thing that is missing in the entire equation. You have got backroom teams being paid handsomely. You have officials. Okay, there's a massive amount of voluntary work being done. There is no doubt about it. But I'm just wondering, when is the push for pay going to come from the player groups? I know at the moment, travel-wise, they get 70 pence a mile or 70 cents a mile and all of that. But they're the people that are providing the entertainment. They're the people that are attracting the audiences. when are we going to have maybe an uprising there? When are we going to have a group saying we're not playing
could
any longer?
Could I ask you then, Martin, are you for players to be paid?
No, I'm not. I'm against
so
it.
Your point is?
Well, my point is basically, I am against seeing them being paid. But I do think myself that there will be a run that will at some stage say, we're not prepared to play any longer unless we are paid. I hope that doesn't come, but my fear is that it might.
Okay.
Well, I suppose that one, Martin and Tomas, that has been kind of, if you like, sort of on the cards, you know, for quite a while now, and it hasn't happened yet. But that's a different debate, if you like. And it's one that we might return to again, obviously, through the year. Gentlemen, I'm going to draw a halt to this because we've had a great chat. And if the rest of the chats that we have through the year are anything to go by, then we're in good shape. Just as we were talking on that last topic there, just by chance, I was looking at a magazine that was here in front of me on the table, and there's an article on Max Verstappen, the Formula One champion, who was actually paid, Tomas, $40 million a year. So could I suggest that somebody down in Cork there send him a letter and say, "Dear Max,
we're looking for real sugar daddy.
You'll hardly spend the $40 million in sex.
We're looking for a sugar daddy, Michael. So if you don't have any sneakers, I'll go over there, will you?"
Gentlemen, we're going to close it out. Thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed it. Thank you to everybody for listening. We'll be back again with the next episode in another week or two. So hope to talk to you then. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.